This ASAP Athletic Strength and Power Podcast with Coach Kim Wood is brought to you by the Ram Sled Company. Find out which Ram Sled is right for you at www.theramsled.com. This is Ed Sicali coming from Cincinnati, Ohio today. I'm not too far from the University of Cincinnati, Clifton, if you know the general Cincinnati area pretty well. For our listeners out there, Kim Wood, our guest today on the Athletic Strength and Power podcast. He spent 30 years with the Cincinnati Bengals as the strength coach. He was one of the first strength coaches in the National Football League. Kim, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks, Ed. But what do you mean? You're at my house, Ed. What do you mean, welcome? It's my lines. You're stealing my lines.
Well, it's
but it's great having you here.
Yeah, it's our show. Here. It's
and, regardless, or as some people say, irregardless, it's great having you here.
It's our show, but it's your studio, definitely.
This is a show? This is a show? I'm serious, Ed. This is not a show.
Gotcha.
Okay, go. Get it.
Yeah, thanks for it. And the guard dogs are here also, so...
And they're watching you very closely, Ed.
Yes, they are. And I'll tell you what, you've added some a new barbell here. You want to tell us about that barbell here in your kitchen?
Well, we got a very unusual piece. It's one of Professor Barker's... weights. It's an actual barbell. The people have seen it in ads. I don't think anybody has one of these. It's from about 1905, and it's a very rare museum piece. I recently got it, and it's a part of our collection here, and it's in the kitchen. It weighs about 45 pounds, and I do wrist curls with it.
You know, I was about to mention, not every kitchen has a barbell like that in it, nor do they have a collection of dumbbells and kettlebells
actually,
in their kitchen.
Actually, I enjoy lifting in the kitchen, and then I have a bedroom on the third floor, and I lift up there. You don't need fancy facilities to get strong. And I lift down in the basement. I've got a gym out back, which is fancy, but it's got so much stuff in it, you can barely get in or out of it. But like I say, you don't have to have fancy facilities, and you just need basic equipment.
But let me add this. Wherever you go, you're going to see a hammer strength machine. Kim Wood, whom I'm here with today, is the founder of that company. And
one of the founders.
Yeah, one of the founders. And
we got a lot of machines out there, and they're virtually indestructible, and most of them we got out there are still out there. In the late 80s, Pete Brown and I, who's one of the owners of the Cincinnati Bengals, we went into business with Gary Jones, Arthur Jones' son, and we started Hammer Strength, and it was very successful for us. In the late 90s, Pete and I sold the company. You know, I was ground floor with the certainly the machines, and the fact that we also sold probably more York barbells than anybody in history. Let's put it this way. I think I have a real good perspective on what's happening in the strength industry today. And I, although I'm retired, I still pay close attention.
Yeah, I mean, you've had a tremendous influence on the National Football League, the way they train.
I'm a legend. It's true.
Yeah. And even today, you're the director, basically, of Football Strength and, of course, footballstrength.com.
One of the things that we do, Ed, is that I got together with Mike Gittleson, who was Bo Schembechler's strength coach for 30 years at the University of Michigan, Bo's first strength coach, and I was with the Bengals for 30 years or more. We put on a clinic once a year. We're going into our fifth year in doing it, and it's about preparing people to play and withstand the kind of forces and stresses that they're going to encounter in a very violent game of football. We also pretty much taken a priority on the training, the structures of the head and the neck that help dissipate the forces that can cause concussions, because that's a real priority in training football people these days. But no, I'm still, like I say, I'm not in the business, but I'm still in the business. And it's still important to me. I still follow it. Training with weights for football and the kind of preparation that's necessary. Okay, that's kind of what I'm all about. And I guess I'm getting old, but I'm too old to change, baby.
Well, we're 2015 now. 1975, a head injury meant a lot, was a lot different than it is now. What were some of the things that, you know, when a guy got dinged up on the head back in 75 or whatever, 78, what's the difference between now and back then?
Well, I think they know more about it. I understand this, Ed, that, you know, although my program was not the first program in the NFL, it was one of the first organized programs where I was an actual assistant coach. And but we always trained. We always knew about the ability of the neck and head and jaw muscles to dissipate the forces on the brain. And we always trained the neck. We always trained it hard. And don't forget, it was a really rough deal, especially in double sessions. But I was very fortunate that the my first coach with the Bengals and who continued to own the team was an influence on what we did, and that was Paul Brown. So we didn't it wasn't a grind it up, destroy everybody type training camp. But it, at the same time, is that I'll have to say that during the times when we did nothing else, we still trained the neck. And when the heat was bad and we couldn't really get in a good program, we always trained the neck. You know, injuries are injuries. A good portion could be prevented. Not all can be prevented because football is a very dangerous and violent game. The tragedy is that they didn't know too much about it. The players themselves didn't know too much about it in those days. And if you got dinged or even knocked out, you'd go back in the game. To the NFL's credit and major college and high school's credit, they take a much different perspective on things now that we're aware. And I was aware, but not to the degree that I am now, of the vulnerability of the human brain, okay, in a hard contact sport like football. And this is something that it's important to me now. That's why we have our clinics.
Kim, not only were you, you know, a coach in the National Football League, but you're also a huge fan of the NFL. You know, a month ago, whatever, we wrapped up another NFL combine. What was your experience at the combine?
I went back so far. We had a situation where we, you know, I was involved in some of the scouting, but not very much, usually for the owners. But the Bengals were a little bit different, and that is all the assistant coaches did the scouting. They had a scouting staff that scouted the games of the college players in the fall and did some scouting in the offseason. But prior to the draft, each individual Bengal coach scouted his own people. And once in a while I was called in. The combine, which is probably more a convention for NFL coaches, was not something, even though it was, although it initially was not in Indianapolis, it's been there quite some time now. Although I went a couple times at the end of my career, it was for social reasons. Most of the information they get from the scouting combine, Ed, they already have. I think a thing that's a little bit overrated. I think what you have with Commissioner Goodell, that there's a real effort to make the NFL football experience a 12-month of the year experience, okay? Yeah. And so right after the Super Bowl, you build up to the combine. Now you build up to, you have the free agency season now. Shortly, we'll be building up to the draft.
The draft next month.
And then we'll have the mini camp season, and then we'll have the preseason, and then we have the games. But it's become a 12-month affair.
How about the war room with Paul Brown and the draft?
That was an awesome experience. I can truly say that, you know, I rarely spoke. I was a witness to awesome things, and part of the thing in the Bengals war room was to be with Coach Brown and to have him, what amounted to think out loud with his sons. And it was, let's put it this way, it was as if I got went to the courses necessary for a PhD in football, that the man was brilliant. It would be fun to watch him, because like I say, he would talk, and it would be tantamount to thinking out loud, and just to witness this process of him and his son Pete and his son Mike go through it, because they led the dance, that it was an awesome experience, something I'll always remember. These men taught me football, and like I say, that was it's been a real bonus for me to reflect on how it was done, and it was done very well with them.
One name that I always wanted to ask you about was this Samoa. What do you know about that guy?
Samoa is a good friend of mine. Samoa was we had drafted a Jack Thompson, who from the Washington State University, in the late 70s, and he was third or fourth guy picked in the draft, and he was a quarterback, a great quarterback in college, known as the Throwing Samoan. And a couple years after, and Jack became a good friend of mine, a couple years after we drafted Jack, the quarterback at Washington State was a fellow from Samoa, and his name was Samoa Samoa. And I actually scouted him for the Bengals. I flew to Seattle, Washington, and we went, Jack and I and Samoa went to the, actually the Huskies field, okay? And that was where I first met Warren Moon, who was not playing in the NFL. He was playing in Canada, and he was working out. And Samoa, Jack threw him maybe 100 balls. He caught every one. He was one. He, like I say, he was. They were having me try him out as a receiver, although he played quarterback at Washington State, and he's the most outstanding person as far as catching a football that I have ever seen. And so, you know, carrying that information, I went back and told Paul Brown. Of course, his eyebrows went up, and he gave me a funny look. They brought him. I forget if they drafted him. If they did, it was in the lower rounds. And they brought him to our mini camp. It was one of the neat things in my coaching experience. At the end of it, Paul Brown came up to me and said, he's the best catcher of football, best catcher I have ever seen. And, of course, he coached Dante Lavelli and numerous Hall of Famers. And, you know, and Isaac Curtis played with us. And, you know, some of the great, you know, Charlie Joyner, who's a Hall of Famer. And but Samoa made the team as a receiver. He was not real fast. He was fast enough. But again, the more things you can do, the better. And in our last exhibition game in Chicago, he fielded a punt. And when he caught the ball, he kind of fell back. He went backwards, and we heard a noise, like as if it was like a gunshot. And then he took a couple of steps and fell down, and he had popped his Achilles tendon. So he missed that season. He came back the next year. And his leg was just not the same, but he was a great receiver and a tremendous guy. I think many NFL fans are aware that, and it's been, the media has publicized it to a good degree, and that is that there are a lot of tremendous football players at NFL level that come from the island of Samoa. And the interesting thing is that for many years the coach of the top high school team in Samoa was our guy, Samoa Samoa. And there's been some movies, there's some documentary movies about it, of which he's prominently featured, and some articles about Samoan athletes, because proportionately, there's more Samoans, based on how many Samoans there are in the NFL, than any other group of people. And my experience with Jack and Samoa is they were just first-class warriors, great guys, great athletes. And, of course, like I say, now we have that quarterback from Oregon, the Mariota, who is also of Samoan origin, who people are thinking may be the first or second pick in the NFL draft this year. So, no, as like I say, the Samoa is all right in my team. If I had a chance to pick you know, three or four guys to stand up with me and, you know, fist fight like the Hells Angels or you know, stand up with me when the deal goes down, Samoa would probably be one of those guys.
Who are going to be the top picks in the National Football League this year?
I don't know. We just watched that. We were at the restaurant and Bob the Chicken Man's in Clifton and the Proud Rooster, and we were watching the Pro Day at Florida State. For their quarterback, I think he's a pretty good player. It'll either be him or Mariota from Oregon. You got to have a good quarterback or you're not going to win in the NFL. You know, a Brady or a man. I mean, these guys, and there's always the chance that one of these new fellas might come along and be the next Brady. And I think that that's the smart choice in the draft. Those are the kind of guys that you spend the big money on. And now it's huge money.
You know, Paul Brown used to be the coach for the Ohio State Buckeyes until he went on to somehow ended up with the Browns a few years
later. Well, he went on to, he was national champion at Ohio State, but World War II came and he signed up with the Navy and coached the great Great Lakes team. And then right after the war, he was the first coach, and they started when they started up the Cleveland Browns. And then he was the coach for the Browns for many years until eventually he was out of football for a couple of years and then came and started and was the coach and the owner of the Cincinnati Bengals in 1968. And people hear Lombardi and Tom Landry and a number of the coaches, but he has to be one of the top two or three coaches ever. And he also is one of the people who is the founder of the modern NFL. You got to understand, Eddie, this is a guy that instituted and invented such things as the face mask, the playbook. Okay, let's go down the line. And the man was a very smart man, but a very gracious man. I was very fortunate to be able to coach for him and to know him. It was a real highlight of my life because he's a wonderful fella.
You know, the Cincinnati Bengals could make multi-million dollars with naming rights to their stadium down there where the Bengals play, but in an honor to the coach...
It's Paul Brown Stadium.
It's Paul Brown Stadium.
There's another Paul Brown Stadium, which is almost as big and almost as fancy in Massillon, Ohio. But when Dick LeBeau went in the Hall of Fame, we went up there and I took some friends of mine. We went over to see the Paul Brown Tiger Stadium, and they couldn't believe what a high school stadium was like in northeastern Ohio. But no, Paul Brown was, he's the guy, if you really buckle down. He's the guy that invented modern pro football. And modern pro football, the NFL today is bigger and more powerful than it's ever been. And it may be one of the very few businesses in the United States that actually makes money.
You know, before the NCAA national championship game this year, you spoke out against all the smart people that picked the University of Oregon. You said undoubtedly that the Ohio State Buckeyes were going to win it all.
I called a shot. I should have gone to Vegas.
Yeah, you should have went to Vegas.
I think what the Ohio State, and again, I view myself as a football insider. Even I was surprised because this past year, and being retired, I get to see a lot more TV than ever. Especially ESPN, you know, they had the SEC network, and we're hearing how great SEC football is. And they end up, and of course, it's really was big time, the college playoffs. And then all of a sudden, the SEC teams are out, Alabama's out. And then all of a sudden, Oregon, and then we're hearing about the great Oregon team. But I think some people in some of the press and radio people in Cincinnati called a shot, and that is if you give the Ohio State coach, Urban Meyer, three or four weeks just to train his team for one game, which is what happened, look out. And like I say, they went with a third-string quarterback, and they blew out Oregon, and I thought it was awesome, an awesome achievement. And I would think that Ohio State is going to be right up there for a number of years. And I don't know Urban Meyer, but I am a true fan of his coaching ability because he's really got a good team. And that quarterback, and I don't even remember his name, he's really good. And
Cardale Jones.
Yeah, he's a good player. That kid could throw the ball. And he wasn't first team.
Yeah, he can launch
and,
it.
And the kid that they had before him, the second teamer, what's his name?
JT Barrett, yeah.
Yeah, he was one of the best passers I'd ever seen at any level of football. I mean, you talk about threading the needle by 60, 70 yards downfield. I was, you know, and then they had the Heisman Trophy candidate who missed the whole season. Yeah. And I don't know what they're doing up there, but it's whatever it is they turn out tremendous football teams. And, you know, I've never been, my son went to Michigan and I'm kind of a Michigan fan, but I have to admire what they've done. I know Mickey Mariotti, the strength coach, and they do a tremendous job up there. I mean, it's a real showcase for how to do it the right way. And that guy in Alabama, I imagine he's really pissed.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine he hasn't slept too many nights since Meyer went to Ohio State. They're both from the same neck of the woods up there in northeastern Ohio. And let me tell you, I've been up there quite a bit, and I helped set up the program at a couple of the big schools up there at Massillon, Washington, and Niles McKinley. And when you talk about where the best high school football is played, and Cincinnati's pretty good, but northeastern Ohio, it's cutthroat right down the line. I mean, it's awesome up there.
Of course, I'm talking with Coach Kim Wood. You still keep your iron in the fire with your football strength and footballstrength.com, and you're still getting the word out. And annually, you have a clinic, a strength training clinic for football. This is a no-holds-barred thing, and you come out with the facts, and it's an interesting clinic that you have every year. Tell us about it. It's coming up.
Well, what we're doing, Eddie, is that we want to focus on the real guts of what preparing people to play football is all about. We're not showing off fancy facilities. It's held in a lecture facility. We're not selling anything. It's independent. We're not sponsored by anybody. Okay. I'm in a position, having been one of the very first strength coaches and having been intimately involved with the industry of preparing athletes for football, I've got a pretty good perspective on things. So we deal with all the hot topics. And as I mentioned, it's a priority to try to cut down the concussions and hopefully therefore cut down the brain problems that are being encountered by many football people as they get older. That's important to us. It's a priority. But like I say, one of the things that we deal with is more than just the priority. It's the responsibility that a coach takes in the process of preparing young men to play football. And the point is that it's not everybody's going to play in the NFL. But more than that is we love football. The people that are involved, the people that we have speak, and we have the top speakers in high school, college, and pros that come and talk at our clinic. But like I say, the one thing, and I know these people, and if I don't, I get to know them, and that is we want to know who really cares about the game of football. Because it isn't just who wins. It isn't just how much money you make. The game itself is worth playing. I think young men gain in the playing of it. But the reality is they have to be prepared correctly, physically, to play. And that's the job of the strength coach. And I think I'm a leader in the field, having been one of the first one. I think Mike Gittleson is also. Danny Riley, who I put right up there, he has spoken 2 or 3 years at our clinic. And the point is that the people that care about football and care about football not being toxic, not being criticized, but like I say, the people that care about preparing people properly, that's what our clinics are all about.
And of course, you're going to talk from head to toe on the training for a football player.
We talk about everything, and it's because it's not a show-off clinic. We talk about a lot of things that other people don't talk about. Some of the things that are not particularly popular. Some of the things that people are kind of tired of, and we bring in the experts. And again, one of the things, my good friend Dick Butkus is very much involved in. The anti-drug movement in football, and people are, have heard it for years, and they get tired of hearing about it. We always have something in our program that projects the fact, and that is you don't need drugs to play football, and you don't need drugs to get strong. And we like I say, we view it as a thing where people from the background of preparing athletes physically can get together and roll up their sleeves and talk strength training and talk about the right stuff, not the wrong stuff.
Yeah. As a young strength coach myself, years ago, I remember, talking to you about it. You told me players don't need drugs. They don't need steroids. They need to train hard and eat right. It's kind of really cool to see especially at the collegiate level now, that this NCAA, rules and regulations on all the food and everything is changing, and the players are really getting the nutrition that they really need.
Well, they're getting good food, and I think that's part of it. But the point is that football, it should be something that's basic, and it's not something that which is downplayed because of the popularity of the NFL and the focus on winning. Like I say, we're talking about Ohio State, national champions. okay? But the point is there's something that's worthwhile about football. Everybody who plays it gains from it. You learn about yourself. You learn about other people. You learn how to deal with other people. You learn how to pick yourself up off the ground and get back in it. You know how to deal with adversity. I think football is very important as far as the American culture. I don't want it to be just focused on the who the winners are, and let's forget everything else. The point is, I think it's important that it continue as a sport that people play. But to play it, you must be prepared correctly.
What did you think of the first year of the college playoff system?
Well, I think it changed everything. I was as glued to the TV set, you know, closely to all the games. I do. I am a little bit critical because I think it diminished the bowl situation, all the different bowls. And for me, there was an advantage to me of watching the bowls and guessing of who should be number one, rather than there be a tournament that establishes who's number one. It really was amazing, really, with what Ohio State did. And I think that what they really did has been played down. And like I say, seeing as how they've got just about all the same players for a couple of years in the future, I think people should get used to it. But I thought it was fun. I liked the old, I liked watching the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day and having it be the granddaddy of the bowls and Mel Allen announcing and it being something. And I miss Lindsey Nelson doing the Cotton Bowl and, you know, the old, like I say, seeing the teams that you didn't see now. Now football itself, if you're a football fan, you can see just about every major college game. If you spend a little extra money on DirecTV, you can watch just about every pro game. And so there's kind of a glut out there. I mean, I have to, in the old days, we got one or two college games and no pro games. And we, you know, and I just glued to my set every Saturday afternoon with watching the different, now you get everything. And I think we're all spoiled. I also think it's a lot of fun. And, you know, football is at all different levels. It's very important to me. And I really enjoy the NFL Network. And especially when I can see all the old films of the NFL, but when I coached and prior to when I coached, and in fact, I hate to tell you this, but I even have a subscription to the Sirius XM satellite radio so I can listen to the NFL radio every night. It's my friend Alex Marvez and Gil Brandt, the guy, the player personnel guy for the Cowboys. They put on a heck of a show. It's every night. So, yeah, I'm getting my fill of football, and I still like it. And in fact, I love it.
Chuck Bednarik.
Bednarik just passed away. Concrete Charlie, great player. Great player. Last of the two-way players.
You know any stories about him?
I know a lot of stories about him, but Ed, I can't tell them.
And then let's wrap up talking about your clinic. Let's highlight again. When is it? Where is it?
Well, it's June 26th. And 27th, it's a Friday night, Saturday, all day Saturday affair. The best thing what you want to do is go to footballstrength.com. It all the particulars. It's in a lecture hall called Palette 23, which is in right in Cincinnati, right close to the university and the hospitals. $25,
Coach.
You get a meal. We get food with it.
That's what I was going to ask you. You know,
Bob the Chicken Man.
I lift
a
lot. Yeah. I hit my bench presses, the squats. I do it all. But, you know, I got to have protein.
You'll get protein at this. We got hamburgers, chicken sandwiches. Like I say, everything that you would want is there. But the important thing is that we get that some of the top and many of the top strength people of all different levels come to this because, again, they can roll up their sleeves and talk strength training. But the point is it's a fun thing. If anybody's involved with the training of athletes, I mean, we're focused on football, but I think it's of value for anybody who's involved in preparing athletes for sports performance. This is not a money-making endeavor. It's a service endeavor for the people that we feel are the stewards of football, the people that really care about the game.
Footballstrength.com. Coach Kim Wood, once again, thanks for joining us with our Athletic Strength and Power podcast today.
Athletic strength and power is a wonderful thing. It's something that I go to whenever I turn on the computer, I go there and check out what's new. And when it comes to preparing athletes, especially football players, your website tells me I was sick this winter and was unable to go up to the Michigan State Clinic. I was watching the other day. You had a actual more than a podcast, an actual a video of Ken Manny giving an excellent talk. And the point is I just say is that I have to think that it's one of the most successful and it's one of the go-to places as far as knowing what's going on in the training of athletes. And I commend you and Ted for your website.
Thank you for joining us today. We look forward to seeing you at your clinic.
We'll see you then. Thank you.